Hey, everybody, what did Joe Biden run on? Also, what's happening in Illinois schools? And finally, Isabel and I answer your questions at the end of this episode, those of you that emailed us, freedom@charliekirk.com, in this action-packed episode brought to you by those of you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. If you'd like to get involved with Turning Point USA, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war, go to tpusa.com. Lot to cover in this episode. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
You may not know this about me, but I'm kind of an undercover, some people would call it a nerd, when it comes to studying the global economy. I love seeking out financial wisdom. When it comes to my own portfolio, I always value precious metals. Noble Gold is the firm I trust to buy gold and silver from, which can serve as a hedge of protection in your IRA. First reason, they are a United States-based company. Supporting American businesses is so incredibly important. Second reason, Noble Gold has impeccable online reviews. A great online reputation is a must if you're going to trust a team's financial counsel. Third reason, Noble Gold has an experienced staff who works hard to make life easy for you. Any paperwork that might pop up takes less than 5 minutes to complete. Maybe it's an old 401k that needs a home. Maybe you're just like me and curious about your options. If so, grab a free gold guide by visiting noblegoldinvestments.com to learn more. I respect this team, and I know you will as well. Call Noble Gold right now. Tell them you heard about investing on my show. They will find the right plan on your budget. That's noblegoldinvestments.com. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Welcome back here with Isabel Brown. So I want to ask this question is, what did Biden run on? Now, we all know around the shenanigans and the tomfoolery that surrounded the way we do elections in our country. We've been through that in great detail, I think more so than almost any other program. But the question should be, what did Biden actually run on? What if Biden went to Pennsylvania and he told the potential voters of Pennsylvania, you know what? Let me tell you my day one plan. On day one, I'm going to abolish the Keystone XL pipeline. And then I'm going to sign an executive order so all of your daughters can have men in their locker rooms. Vote for Biden. You think that would fly in Wisconsin? Michigan? It's very interesting. And Biden reminds me, at least the campaign that they ran, and I know that there was very little exposure. You couldn't talk about him on social media. He did very few interviews. They were all tightly controlled. He didn't have any sort of adversarial kind of, you know, conversations or interviews, I think is a better way to word that. But Biden reminds me of Barack Obama in the sense that he is willing to disguise his radicalism just to get to power. Hillary Clinton was not as convinced of this. Hillary Clinton was all over the place, calling people deplorables. I mean, she was a walking political mess. Joe Biden is too, and he was super tightly controlled, but the Democrats basically said, Joe, just say the right things, get in power, and then you go govern like a radical. I want to go to cut 26, where it shows that Joe Biden did slip up occasionally when he was just screaming at this union worker. Play tape.
Wait. Take the AR, your AR-14s.
Hold on. Hey, let's go. There's a lot of guys wanting this.
I'm not worried.
Just scream AR-14s, not sure what that is. I don't work for you. And remember this tape where Biden said clearly that he will abolish fossil fuels, we'll go away with it. And then he said he misspoke afterwards. That alone should have lost Joe Biden the presidency. But Joe Biden tried to convince people he was a moderate. I know a lot of people that are realizing and regretting their vote, because they're seeing that he is not exactly the calm-speaking moderate that he pretended to be. Joe Biden said multiple times throughout his campaign that he was going to take care of the virus. We're going to handle the virus because I have a plan, man. But then Joe Biden comes out and says in cut three, there's nothing we can do to change the trajectory of this pandemic in the next several months. Could you imagine if Joe Biden said this in the campaign trail? Because his whole campaign was around, I'm not Donald Trump and I can handle the virus better than you. Cut three.
If we fail to act, there will be a wave of evictions and foreclosures in the coming months as this pandemic rages on. Because there's nothing we can do to change the trajectory of the pandemic in the next several months.
But this is what he said when he was on the campaign trail. Let's play cut four.
We're in a situation now where the New England Medical Journal, one of the serious, most serious journals in the whole world, said for the first time ever that the way this president has responded to this crisis has been absolutely tragic. And so, folks, I will take care of this. I will end this. I will make sure we have a plan.
Two completely different ways of describing what's happening. And cut 33, remember when he said, I'm promising I will shut down the virus if I'm elected. Cut 33.
We need a president who's going to bring us together, not pull us apart. I'll put in place a plan to deal with this pandemic responsibly. I've already done it. And bring this country together around testing, tracing, and masking. But I'm going to shut down the virus.
You got a bunch of people honking their horns. Okay, Isabel, you had a thought?
Just when it comes to all of this, I find it fascinating that the entire fall, for several months, all we heard was that there was a failure to act when it came to the previous administration, mm-hmm. which is nothing but a complete lie. Having studied healthcare policy myself, they were one of the most robust administrations ever in responding to a pandemic in a very effective way. You saw a million people being vaccinated every day in the United States of America by the time President Trump left office. And yet now, all of a sudden, there's nothing we can do when it comes to fighting a virus. And no matter how hard we try,
and it's predictable,
it's inevitable.
Right? It's predictable because – and I we knew a couple things were going to happen. And out of all of them, if Joe Biden ran honestly, then he would have lost. You see, Donald Trump ran honestly. Everything Donald Trump campaigned on in 2016, he ended up doing. Everything he campaigned on this last cycle – he meant and he was doing. Joe Biden had to assume power through deceiving you and deceiving the American people. By deceiving voters by saying, I'm going to end the virus. And now he's like, well, there's really nothing we can do. It's a virus. That's the whole point that we've been making. And now you're seeing people open up the states. What has changed? Here, if we had an honest media in our country, which we don't, if we had an honest group of reporters, which we don't, they would be outside of the office of Gretchen Whitmer and asking a sequence of questions as following. What epidemiologically has changed from January 19th to January 26th? Your virus rates are actually worse based on all the numbers that you've been using. In California, they're worse. Yet Gretchen Whitmer in Cut 21 says this.
Today, the Department of Health and Human Services is issuing an epidemic order to resume indoor dining on Monday, February 1st. I know this pandemic has hurt our restaurant owners, our restaurant workers. I want you to know that I will continue to do everything in my power to support you and your families.
I think that the Michigan State House should hold hearings to find out when that speech was written. I think that the Michigan State House should hold hearings and start asking witnesses when that started to get floated out. Because in the restaurant industry, January 10th versus January 22nd, February 1st, that's the difference between making it or getting it or folding completely. So let me get this straight, Gretchen Whitmer. You could not open up restaurants during one of the most busiest times of the year where the restaurants make or break all their money, the Christmas season and New Year's. But once Joe Biden becomes president, the virus epidemiologically becomes more under control? We know exactly what's happening here. This is a group of people that want power at all costs, and they're willing to put political purposes over the moral good of a nation. And where I think that we need to start making the case is Joe Biden is governing on an agenda that no one voted for. Whereas when Donald Trump was governing in 2017 and he got sworn in, he was governing on an agenda that was so explicitly clear on what he was going to do. None of this stuff Joe Biden communicated when he was running. None of it. I mean, it slipped out here and there, but the massive advertising and the majority of people that I know that voted for Biden were like, well, don't you see his wonderful ads about healing and bringing the country together? And yeah, you spend $900 million on the same advertisement in the state of Michigan, it's going to move the dial. And so Joe Biden is a president governing without a mandate. Now, that might seem like it's inconsequential to you, but it's actually really important. So what ends up happening is when a president governs without a mandate, there's kind of a lagging effect where now all of a sudden some of these stories are going to spread. Conversations are going to happen. Some of the honest journalists and podcasts are going to talk about this. And then 60 days from now, you're going to have 10 million people say, I didn't vote for any of this. And you'll start to see that reflected in approval ratings and voter registration and so much more. Joe Biden is governing like a completely different person than what he campaigned for. The Chinese coronavirus has changed the way a lot of businesses operate. We spend a lot more time on video calls, email, and in-chat discussions. Unfortunately, many of these conversations aren't as safe or as private as we think they are. Interference from foreign governments, hackers, or third-party advertisers means that our private beliefs, intellectual property, are being shared, stored, and spied on. Luckily, I found SquadPod, the only 100% American-owned and operated private team communication platform available today. SquadPod protects your privacy, intellectual property, and right to free speech. It's simple to use. Just create an account, invite your team, and start communicating via their video, organized discussions, or chat features. SquadPod doesn't monitor or censor any of your conversations. They don't create customer profiles or mine or sell any of your information with anyone. To learn about how SquadPod works for you like it does for me, visit squadpod.com/Charlie. That's squadpod.com/Charlie. I gave Isabel a homework assignment about the state I grew up in, Illinois, and District 214. I got an anonymous email from a teacher around there, and it turns out it's more than District 214. And I will not say this teacher's name because they'll probably – I don't know if they're allowed to get fired because they have tenure. But they were alerting us to what was happening in the state of Illinois. I said, Isabel, research this, as she's kind of our campus investigative correspondent. And by the way, if anyone's watching from the Chicagoland area or Illinois area, please email me freedom@charliekirk.com because your mind has got to get blown.
You guys are not going to believe what is going on in Illinois right now. Shocking that I have to say that. It's that bad, you guys. It's beyond your wildest belief.
I'm only like peripherally aware of this, so please go ahead.
So recently, the Illinois State Board of Education approved this new rule for statewide curriculum mandates called the Culturally Responsive Teaching and Leading Standards. And right now, it's pending before the Illinois General Assembly and will be voted on February 16th to put into all curriculum for K-12 schools in Illinois. But essentially, it's a new law that forces teachers to, in their words, embrace and encourage progressive viewpoints and perspectives. That's, you know, fancy buzzwords, but what does that actually mean? Essentially, teachers are mandated by law to discuss current political controversies in class. They have to organize what they call action civics, which are field trips, student protests, lobbying expeditions on behalf of causes like gun control or the Green New Deal. They have to admit that there's unlimited numbers of genders and prioritize representation in the classroom.
This is in a state legislative bill.
State legislative bill. And they're doing everything they can to bring this to the national level and essentially implement it as part of Common Core for all public schools nationwide. This is in addition to critical race theory, which is already a problem in Chicago.
Oh, it's terrible.
If you guys aren't familiar with the 1619 Project from the New York Times, that's among the most woke curriculum you could possibly imagine. But that's already been implemented to all Chicago public schools. So this is in addition to that reality.
This is statewide stuff, though.
And this would be statewide.
This would be in District 211. This would be all across the state of Illinois.
And you might ask, what happens if a teacher, a bold, brave teacher who's rational, says no? They get their teaching license taken away permanently. They have no opportunity to practice what they love.
So
they can't be in the classroom with students.
Current events,
current political controversies, not just events, controversies, whatever that means, admitting that there's unlimited numbers of genders, prioritizing critical race theory, taking their kids to protest for gun control or lobby
serious?
For things like
mobilizing
the Green New Deal.
Children. For a left-wing social justice.
And go above and beyond to mitigate their unearned privileges, like being white. Don't ask me how a teacher is supposed to mitigate the identities that they're born with necessarily, but that is legally mandated if you want to teach in the state of Illinois.
If you're watching this in the state of Illinois or you're hearing this and – my goodness, I'm telling you, everybody. What is this called, Isabel? How can people learn about this?
Yeah, this is important. So remember this name. It's currently pending before the Illinois General Assembly for a few more weeks. It's called the Culturally Responsive Teaching and Leading Standards.
I would be – in a very ironic turn of events, I think it would be interesting to see kind of the very, very liberal, you know, upper middle class schools in Illinois all of a sudden – get a little taste of their own voting. But at the same time, this will destroy the state of Illinois and they will replicate this all across the country.
The whole country.
So they have to mobilize their students to protest.
Yes. Student protests. They're called action civics
events. Let me get this straight. So let's say that there's like a climate change whatever happening in downtown Chicago and you go to Hersey High School right down the street
from
where I grew up.
You're probably going to your climate change protest.
So Hersey High School will have to load up a bus and go to the climate change protest. It just says it's a requirement.
Yes. I wish I was joking.
And then you have to teach there are unlimited genders.
Yep. You have to admit that there are unlimited opportunities for representation. That includes gender, obviously. So conservative, Christian, rational thinking, maybe science teachers have to go against their better judgment to do so.
And biology teachers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back when I was in high school, 9 years ago, none of this nonsense was discussed. This was – Isabel, how long were you in high school?
I graduated high school in 2015, so a while ago, but same thing.
3 years later than me.
Same thing.
When I was in high school, our teacher said there's only two genders. And no one thought anything of it.
I don't even think they had to say there were only two genders.
No, but
it was just
you know how
known.
They explain gender? With chromosomal structures, XX and XY. And don't for a second, liberals watching this, like, oh, you grew up in the Jim Crow era. Okay, I grew up in 2010, okay? And everything was great, okay? No one had these stupid smartphones, and no one was on social media, and everyone talked to each other. And now none of this garbage was being taught in our schools. Critical race theory and I would love if they tried to bring me to a protest in high school for gun control or climate change. That would have been a sight to see. In our fast-paced world, it's tough to make reading a priority. At least it used to be. At thinker.org, thinkr.org, they summarize the key ideas from new and noteworthy nonfiction, giving you access to an entire library of great books in bite-sized form. Read or listen to hundreds of titles in a matter of minutes, from old classics like Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People to recent bestsellers like Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. I can tell you, Thinker is the way that I am able to distill a lot of information quickly. It's important to take a break from mindless social media scrolling and learn something. If you want to challenge your preconceptions, expand your horizons, and become a better thinker, go to thinkr.org to start a free trial today. Again, that's thinkr.org, thinker.org/Charlie. Okay, so let's go to a couple things here. I want to go to impeachment. So impeachment looks like it's heating up.
It is. Our trial is imminently starting on February 8th here. So we are
going to be covering the trial in its entirety here on the Charlie Kirk Show. Late evenings and early mornings, you guys know you can always come to the Charlie Kirk Show for in-depth and factual analysis. And so Biden is now looking like he's signaling support for the impeachment trial. Nothing says unifying the country like impeaching a guy on the back nine at Trump International Golf Course in Florida. He says, quote, I think it has to happen. He acknowledged the effect it could have on his legislative agenda and cabinet nominees, but said there, quote, be a worse effect if it didn't happen. Do we have sound on this? I don't know if we do or not. Biden then told CNN he believed the outcome would be different if Trump had 6 months left in his term, but he said he doesn't think 17 Republican senators will convict Trump. Well, if he doesn't think it's going to happen, then why go through the process of it? The Senate has changed since I was there, but it hasn't changed that much. And so that's what Joe Biden has said about impeachment. Now, in a very interesting turn of events, John Roberts has said he will not show up for the impeachment proceedings. The reason he is giving, at least based on some press reports that are available, is he might actually have to rule on the constitutionality of this impeachment of a former president. Now, Isabel, doesn't the Constitution say civil officer?
It does. It defines someone who's eligible for impeachment as a civil officer. And the legal definition of that word is so important, Charlie. It essentially says it's someone who holds, present tense, holds federal office in the executive branch as well as the judicial branch. There's some extra language there as well. But it doesn't at all apply to individuals who are private citizens. And that's what we would classify former President Trump as being right now. The Constitution also does say in presidential impeachment trials, the Chief Justice of the United States from the Supreme Court has to preside over the process.
So if the Chief Justice isn't presiding over it, it might just eliminate the constitutionality of it off just right off the bat.
Which would be a really interesting tactic for the Supreme Court to take if it eliminates that constitutionality up front.
Yeah, and so the Senate is never really – the Senate's not meant just to try any civilian. It's not the point. This process – we have courts for that, okay? So if you are of the opinion that Donald Trump broke the law – well, then allow the courts to play out that process and allow a D.C. prosecutor to go proceed with that. It looks like the senators need to appease their base, and they're not really sure what they're doing, quite honestly. This is a show trial. And any Republican that votes in favor of impeachment actually is not making this about Trump. They are now saying they don't care about the United States Constitution. Great legal minds, and my favorite, the great one, Mark Levin, went off on this the other day, saying that this is a non-starter. This is nowhere near what the founding fathers thought impeachment should be for. Can the United States Senate just start hosting trials for every civilian? Is that the point of the United States Senate? Maybe the United States Senate should host a trial for Ghislaine Maxwell. I don't know. I'd be interested to see that. That's not what the Senate's supposed to do. And you might say, well, she was never a civil office holder. Yeah, but Trump's no longer. He's a former. The Senate is now playing jury, judge, and executioner with a private citizen. The process of impeachment was always set up to try and handle high crimes and misdemeanors for current office holders. Now, granted, this is uncharted constitutional terrain that we're in. What we're saying has not been ruled by the courts because it's never been done before. I'm hesitant to say what we're saying is wrong because I don't see how it could be. I don't. And if the Supreme Court rules in a different direction, then so be it. We'll stand corrected. But the fact that John Roberts is not showing up goes to show that there's something suspicious of the constitutionality of this. Can we play tape of Rand Paul, who just gave a wonderful speech from the United States Senate floor? Play tape.
Hyperpartisan Democrats are about to drag our great country down into the gutter of rancor and vitriol, the likes of which has never been seen in our nation's history. Instead of doing the nation's work with their new majorities in the House, the Senate, and the executive branch, Democrats are wasting the nation's time on a partisan vendetta against a man no longer in office. It's almost as if they have no ability to exist except in opposition to Donald Trump. Without him as their boogeyman, they might have to legislate and to actually convince Americans that their policy prescriptions are the right ones.
Senator Rand Paul is phenomenal, and he made the point that we have been making. Without Donald Trump as kind of this archetype of the personification of evil and everything wrong with the country, you remove him from that equation, all of a sudden the American people are going to say, okay, so you're in power. What are your solutions? What are your ideas? What do you want to do for our country? Wait a second. You want to let men go into women's locker rooms? You want to get rid of fossil fuels? And so Rand Paul hits it perfectly, and we actually made this point last week. We came to the same conclusion. The Democrats are scared right now. The Democrats are fearful. The Democrats are worried because their agenda is now going to be put under a microscope, because their agenda is now going to become under intense cross-examination. But the one thing that could prevent that from happening is you don't understand there's a clear and present danger in our country, and it's the guy down in South Florida in Palm Beach. He's the problem. And they're going to try and keep this narrative going for as long as possible. And I find it really interesting, you know, Donald Trump, without any social media, you know, immorally being removed from all public communication. President Trump's silence has been very loud lately.
It has. Deafening, almost.
Because the media doesn't know how to deal with their morning news cycle without a new Trump tweet or a retweet cycle. And maybe President Trump is preparing for his Senate trial. Who knows what he's doing? Former President Trump, who knows? However, it is kind of driving the media to go to new lengths to try and attack him and attack his supporters. And at the crux of the entire impeachment is whether or not Donald Trump incited a mob that participated in the tragic events on January the 6th. And if I could, we've broken this down before, but here's the nuance that is so sorely missing. One group of people are legitimate militants that didn't attend the rally, that were there beforehand, and they didn't have Trump gear on. They had military tactical gear on. The second group of people were professional instigators, people that are always looking for a fight. Some were BLM, some were Antifa, whatever. Some were far right wing people. And the third category was a crowd and a mob gone terribly wrong. All of those got mixed together and turned into this tragic event. More and more evidence is coming forward from the FBI and other organizations that the sophistication of planning well predated the president's remarks at the Ellipse. That's not to say every single person that went into the Ellipse didn't do something wrong. That's not the argument. The argument is, was any portion or part of this pre-planned? Or was this all just a spontaneous crowd that turned into a mob that turned into a domestic terror attack? And more it's turning out, based on all public reports, that there were people that came to D.C. with the intention, with the pre-planning, with the premeditation, with the walkie-talkies and the zip ties and the gas masks and all sorts of different measures that they wanted to go take the Capitol building.
And interestingly, you broke this down the other day, Charlie, but just as a reminder for everyone listening, the more we investigate the situation of January the 6th, then we find out that at least some of the people there had some sort of planning mechanism in place to execute what they did. There's less and less evidentiary support that Trump's speech had anything to do with the event happening, which is counterintuitive to their argument of impeachment. But as you said, they can't let go of this idea of impeachment. They're holding on to it so tight, even if there's absolutely no logic behind it whatsoever, because if they did let it go, they'd have to start answering to the state of affairs in our country, that 8 million people in our country fell into poverty last year because of lockdowns, that we saw the greatest increase in murder in a single year ever in 2020 in our country, largely because of lockdowns and associated problems with that. And it is the left that is inherently responsible for all of those things that took place in our country last year. So they're the ones to answer for this. They're also the ones in charge now. So they're easily the ones to blame. So I find this interesting that we want to know what happened on January the 6th. Everybody needs to know. But the more we investigate it, the less likely it looks that President Trump is even remotely responsible. And that harms their cause of impeachment. So we're at sort of an impasse here.
Yeah. And as we've mentioned before, their desire to kind of create a new security state is actually inversely related with their case for impeachment. So what do I mean by that? So they want to pass a new Patriot Act. And the argument for their Patriot Act is that there's a premeditated intention that is rooted in these awful groups, and they're going to do it again. Their argument for impeachment is that it was a spontaneous crowd gone wrong. Now, mind you, it's not either or. It's a mixture of both, actually. And what I would like to see in this impeachment trial is President Trump's lawyers have the ability to call some witnesses. So someone that should be called as a witness is the head of the Washington, D.C. National Guard. Big piece today with him, if you could find his name. And he said, look, I wanted to send more National Guard troops, but I wasn't allowed to. There's a huge piece in that. We can go on that. Someone told me not to. And look, we've gone through in a previous episode last week what the president said correctly and what he said incorrectly. And I think we gave one of the most honest assessments of his speech at what that he gave at the Ellipse, where he should not have told the supporters he was going to the Capitol with them six or seven times. And the question really remains, and this is going to be up for the prosecution to determine, which is the House, is if the agencies had noticed that something was going down, why didn't they brief the head of the executive branch? And if they did, that opens a different set of questions that puts President Trump on defense. That's the whole crux of the entire impeachment debacle. But to lazily and sloppily label it as just the spontaneous event that went wrong is not accurate. Before we get into that, there was something else I wanted to get into, Isabel. And this was where you mentioned we saw the largest increase in homicides in American history.
2020 increase. Was a tough year for many reasons, as I think we can all agree. But what's really frustrating is just how disappointing it is to see this rise in not only homicides, but also poverty. So to break this down for you guys, 2020 saw the largest increase in homicides ever in American history in a calendar year. Murder was up nearly 37% across the board in our country. I don't think many of us are surprised by that. We saw so much civil unrest last year. We saw such an attack on our police officers across the board. So I think that's definitely related to that. But it is disappointing to see and certainly impacts all of us, regardless of where we live. And similarly, we also saw the largest increase in poverty in 2020, up to 11.7% poverty rate in the United States this year.
It's because of the lockdowns. And this is one of the biggest conflations, the great conflation. We talked about this at length on our podcast, where the Democrats and the liberals intentionally conflate two things: the virus and the lockdowns. The virus is an epidemiological threat to a certain group of people that will infect you and possibly kill you if you're over a certain age and you have certain underlying health conditions. It's a real thing. But then you also have a reaction to the virus. We tried to kill a mouse with a Tomahawk missile, and with it, we destroyed an entire generation of wealth, job creators, and entrepreneurs. And guess what? Wealthy people are doing better than ever before. We went in great detail yesterday. The wealthiest people in our country are $500 billion richer now than they were a year ago. Meanwhile, America saw the largest increase in poverty. So where does this lead us? What happens next then? So you have Bezos, the Louis Vuitton guy, the Google people, they all get $500 billion richer. The Louis Vuitton guy, Arnault, $76 billion richer.
Yeah.
$76 billion. What's happening because of the sloppiness of the ruling class, because of the, and I'm going to say this word, and I do not say this word lightly, but because of the greed of the ruling class, and I don't say that lightly, you are now going to, you are making the economic argument for Bernie Sanders. Now, we have a different way to address it as conservatives. It's going to be really hard for me to try to convince somebody not to be sympathetic with the AOC economic redistribution argument. It's going to be really hard. Because someone's going to say, wait a second, hold on. I re-entered poverty in the last year. I did everything. I played by the rules. I kept my family together. I had to wait in line in a food bank, but my job shut down. And you're supposed to say that I'm supposed to pay more in taxes and Louis Vuitton guy has to pay less? Where Louis Vuitton guy is now worth, how much is he worth now? Like $135 billion or something? And so that sort of dramatic income and wealth inequality only ends in one way. You know how it ends? With unrest. That's how it ends. And so sometimes the unrest, the economic unrest, it manifests itself in like social justice causes like BLM Inc. What they're really protesting is the economic conditions. They just found a different way to communicate it in a way that the media and the corporate masters aren't upset about. Louis Vuitton guy's worth $148.8 billion for selling you Moet champagne and clothes you don't need. Yeah, you wanna see the Great Reset? Keep it up. You want to destroy the family? Keep it up. You want to destroy private property? Keep it up. It's almost as if this was all part of a strategy to try and erode the system that we have grown to love over a period of time. And if you're listening to this right now on a podcast, please listen to the other podcast where it says finally some good news. And it's about the filibuster. And some of you are emailing us, Charlie, you're talking about the most depressing things. Why is your YouTube labeled finally some good news? Fair point. The first the first hour was all about the good news of the Senate filibuster. Senator Kyrsten Sinema and Senator Joe Manchin have said they will not vote to lift the filibuster. Therefore, the big structural changes they want to make to our country are becoming increasingly less likely.
Right.
And so the state edition, electoral college abolition, and Supreme Court additions, H.R. 1, Green New Deal. And I know some of you are saying, Charlie, this is not good news. Okay. I'm going to implore you guys, find the sweet little victories in the things that aren't happening, okay? I know you're used to offensive wins. We have to get used to defensive wins right now.
At least for a little while.
And these are Democrats that are standing up courageously for the institution of the Senate. Here's a question right here from Rachel Cook about it. So only the majority party can call the filibuster? Also, you were going to talk about current things happening in Arizona and Georgia regarding legislative stuff. Thank you, Rachel. That is such a good point. I am. So, hey, Connor, can you get up the Georgia state bill they have about voting reform? I do want to go into that. Thank you for reminding me of that, Rachel. That's why we have the best listeners out there.
I know. We love you.
They're
guys.
Very active. And also, we stay in good touch at freedom@charliekirk.com. Yes. So the majority party, whoever has more votes, can technically break the filibuster. And the filibuster is just a procedural step, right? So the filibuster is a barrier before you can get to a majority vote. Basically, it's cloture, like the end of the debate. And I'm way oversimplifying this right now, by the way, everybody, because if I were to explain it as it's written, I'd be here till Saturday, okay? The Senate rules are there. You ever read the book, The Never-Ending Story? You ever
yes.
read that book?
Yes, that was a good
Senate
book.
Senate rules are longer than that. The Never-Ending Story. Yeah, we read that in fourth grade. It really was very, very long.
It was a great book.
It was very long. So, but the point is this, is that the fact that Sinema and Manchin aren't going to go along to it, if Schumer got every Democrat, they would lose the vote to end the filibuster at 48 votes.
Right.
Now, I have been, you know, putting a lot of praise on Manchin and Sinema. They still might be changed on certain votes where they might say, okay, you don't want to get rid of the filibuster. Just get rid of the filibuster on just this one state, please. We really need Puerto Rico or D.C. states to be added. They're not signaling any wavering at all whatsoever on this. And if they hold the line, they will go down as some of the most consequential, brave Democrats that kept the American Republic together. I don't say that lightly. I don't. Because if they were to go along with it, they'd get 50 votes and D.C. and Puerto Rico would become new states and you'd have four new Democrat senators almost instantaneously, two new Democrat congresspeople and new electoral college votes that would only favor the Democrats. So understand the Democrats are disinterested in governing. This is a really important point. They're interested in expanding or changing the rules of engagement so that they can strengthen their own power.
Right, because it's precisely their policies that are not popular and that end up harming individual people on a day-to-day basis. When you have higher taxes, you have less to provide for your family. When minimum wage goes up, inflation goes up, and then everything costs more. So again, you can't provide for yourself and your family. It's harder to get a job, especially for everybody in the fossil fuels industry now. I feel terrible, and my heart just goes out to you if you're affected by that. But these policies aren't popular. They drive people apart. They push you down.
Yes.
They put the government back on top and start saying that we are ruling you. We're not accountable to you. Take what we say and run with it. So I think that's so important, Charlie, because this idea of changing the rules of engagement limits their ability to be held responsible for these unpopular policies.
That is such a good point, Isabel. And so I want to ask about the fossil fuel thing. So they're kind of on a real diabolical campaign to eliminate fossil fuels. Okay, yeah, let's go to cut 29, please.
I guarantee we're going to end fossil fuel, and I am not going to cooperate.
Man, those people clapping. And so that was during the campaign. And then, of course, he said, I'm not going to ban fracking no matter what. But the Keystone XL pipeline, how many jobs that eliminate? 20,000?
Over 15, I believe, was the exact amount. But, you know, this elimination of not just that pipeline, but the attack on fossil fuels in general is estimated to eliminate more than 1 million jobs in our country this year.
Well, you know what's really interesting about this? Do you know that anti-fracking measures outside of New York have never succeeded on a ballot referendum? So, Isabel, do you remember when they put fracking on the ballot in Colorado?
Oh, yeah. I will never forget. And it failed miserably.
Yeah, so talk about that. So Colorado, environmentalist state.
Mm-hmm. Very, very greeny state. And we're proud of it, regardless
greeny,
of who
right?
you are. Oh, yeah. We're all granola. We love it.
I love Colorado, and I love the outdoors. And so I really do. Colorado's a gift of a state. It's been abused by Democrats, but that's a different topic for a different time. But really interestingly, though, there was a big effort by the greenies, by the social justice, what do they call themselves? Not the Paris Climate Accord people, the Sierra Club people.
Mm-hmm.
That's who.
Mm-hmm.
The Sierra Club people. And they came and they got fossil fuel fracking on the ballot.
Right. They wanted to completely eliminate fracking in the state of Colorado, which would have destroyed hundreds of thousands of jobs and, frankly, prohibited our state from running effectively. You know, I find it so interesting that these environmentalists go after oil and gas, they go after fossil fuels, they go after fracking, not realizing that it's the taxes from those industries
that
pay for trail maintenance, that pay for state parks, that pay for our national parks, the clothes that you're wearing, this water bottle, your phone, your computer. None of that would be possible without fossil fuels.
And it's also environmentally friendly
if
you actually know the process of what fracking actually is. I can't stand the term fracking. I told the fossil fuel people a long time ago, find a new name.
Yeah.
Just like the school choice people stopped calling it vouchers. They started calling it scholarships. It got super popular. Fracking like sounds dirty, okay? It's just the way it comes off the tongue. Fracking.
They need a rebranding
effort. No, seriously.
Effort.
It just sounds awful. I mean, you might as well just call it, you know what? I'm really in favor of death. Like that, but might as well be the branding, okay? You just need new words, okay? Just come up with a new word. It just sounds – fracking, it just sounds so dark.
Yeah, marketing experts, please help
us
with this.
Medieval.
Send us your suggestions.
No, it does. It sounds, again, this is just a complete – there's just certain words that don't sound – they do not resonate phonetically well with the human ear, and
it's
fracking
true.
Is one of those.
Anyway, in
it's
the state
just
of Colorado –
it's such a clumsy word. Anyway, back to the actual merits of fracking.
We miserably killed that on our state ballot. I think that was on the ballot in 2016,
That's a really important point, though, right?
Because people realize, wow, we're not going to have trail maintenance anymore. We're not going to have jobs to pay for things. Mm-hmm. We won't have tax revenue to help with our schools. We're not going to have any opportunity to push through these environmental policies that we are passionate about. And Colorado is a bit of a unique place where conservatives are equally as concerned about that stuff. So I find this so interesting that was such a unique test subject of a state where you have this very environmentally friendly culture, people who are very interested in public land conservation and protecting the environment and green energy, and yet overwhelmingly pushed back against this ban on fracking. That is a microcosm for how we are as America, and banning fracking on a large scale nationwide is a horrible idea.
It's a horrible idea, and it's also, again, it's super unpopular. So if a state like Colorado, when given a ballot referendum, will not ban fracking, then what mandate is Joe Biden using to try and abolish fossil fuels and try to end leases and to try to get rid of the Keystone XL pipeline? He's operating without a mandate from the people. No state – only state, I believe – and our team could fact check this, and maybe Connecticut did this, but they don't have oil and natural gas – is New York. I think New York is the only state that had significantly had fracking abolishing – with the support of the people. And New York. And by the way, so New York shares a gift from God called the Marcellus Shale. So the Marcellus Shale is half in Pennsylvania, half in New York. So Pennsylvania, not being insane, decided to extract the oil and natural gas, mostly natural gas. They literally have a city in Pennsylvania called Oil City. I kid you not. It's an oil city. It's in kind of north central Pennsylvania. Because of this, billions of dollars of tax revenue have been given in Pennsylvania. Might not be billions, but they're on pace for that. They have tremendous amount of job creation. It's super popular. Remember, it's so popular, Joe Biden went around saying, I'm not going to ban fracking. In fact, let's play the tape of Joe Biden saying that. I'm not going to ban fracking. Cut 27.
Look, let me be clear also. I'm not banning fracking in Pennsylvania or anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And I can protect Pennsylvania jobs, period. No matter how many times Donald Trump lies.
And so the narrative Joe Biden was pushing is I'm not getting rid of it. So Pennsylvania is super popular there. And if you look at a map of the Marcellus Shale, it goes throughout Pennsylvania, southern New York, a little bit of Ohio, West Virginia, and parts of Virginia. But really the bulk of it, where the real deposits are, is right in Pennsylvania. So New York has made the clueless and ridiculous – not clueless, that's not the right way to do it – just the stupid – can I say that word? I don't use that word very often – stupid decision to not extract oil and natural gas. So this is kind of a sidebar, but do you know what New York has been building instead? To compensate, to try to make up for their lost tax revenue? Casinos. So again, I'm all for gaming. I think that – I guess the right to game, I don't really do it. But I think we can all agree that the more casinos, you're probably not making your community richer, right? That's probably a really good rule of thumb. There's that expression, the house always wins. The house always wins. So the fact they're building 20 new casinos in New York because all about the tax revenue, why don't you just use the Marcellus Shale that's been given in front of you? So New York, they decided to get rid of it. It wasn't they're not the only – I think they're the only major state that's done it. Where Ohio and Pennsylvania has decided to do the common sense thing and just let's extract the minerals we have. It creates a lot of wealth. It creates a lot of jobs, build the middle class, not to mention not just the jobs that are involved, but the restaurants and the schools and all the economic multipliers of it. So Joe Biden is now doing something that no state except New York has actually decided to do. The Dakotas love fracking. Wyoming loves fracking. Montana loves fracking. Colorado, that has two Democrat senators and a Democrat governor and I think a Democrat House and a Democrat Senate.
It's very blue these days.
They even shut down the idea of getting rid of fracking. What mandate is Joe Biden acting on? It would be one thing like it was the gay marriage thing and every state was kind of unfolding it and there's no momentum. It's the opposite momentum. There's no momentum.
Well, it's not a mandate from the people, Charlie. It's a mandate from the radical left who's in power as politicians. And this extends far beyond the concept of oil and gas, too. Joe Biden's entire campaign strategy was let's beat Donald Trump. And that was the entire strategy from the Democrat Party to get people to show up and vote was we're going to beat Donald Trump. We're going to get him out of the White House and then we'll figure out what we're doing later. Well, guess what? We're at later. And the people determining what we're doing now are people like Kamala Harris, who was the most far left senator in the United States Senate beyond Bernie Sanders. People like Bernie Sanders, who admitted yesterday that he's pushing to make Joe Biden further to the left on the political spectrum. You're looking at things that destroy jobs, that implement insane policies in education, that raise your taxes, that make it harder for you to get an education. These policies are not coming from the people, regardless of whether you're a Republican or a Democrat and who you voted for in 2020.
Fracking makes two sentences true. And Joe Biden wants nothing to do with this. Number one, the United States leads the world in producing oil and natural gas. Number two, the United States leads the world in reducing energy-based CO2 emission. Both were made possible thanks to fracking. We're going to find a new word for fracking eventually. Don't worry. We're on it. Email us your suggestions, by the way, freedom@charliekirk.com. Whoever emails us the best suggestion to replace the word fracking and also is subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, I will give you a signed copy of my book. The best suggestion, okay? So I want to see them come in, freedom@charliekirk.com. But there is no mandate for this at all.
No.
There's no popularity. In fact, there's the opposite. There is support to keep fracking in place and oil and natural gas development. Okay, let's get to a question here. Let's go to here. Someone says, should I – okay. Hi, Charlie. As an Arizona resident, would you suggest we reach out to Kyrsten Sinema and thank her for support of retaining the filibuster? Yes. When a Democrat decides to do something to protect individual liberty and freedom in the American Republic, yes. Absolutely. I would recommend that. Thank you. That's a very good question. Let's get to some questions here. Let's go to – here's one here. Okay. Hey, Charlie and Isabel. My name is Steve. Can Nancy Pelosi be called to testify? She was a witness. Was she warned of a possible threat of violence on January the 6th? And if so, why didn't she take action? It's a really good question. I think that she can be called as a witness, and I think she should be. If that's true, if that's what you're saying, I think she's in charge of Capitol Security as Speaker of the House. I'm not sure, at least the highest level of representative. That's floating around there. But if she had aforementioned briefings on this, that would be something worth seeing,
yeah.
Finding out.
I Same think with the President Senate Trump. Can subpoena whoever they would like to these impeachment trials. So if they are interested in gathering information on the truth of what happened on January 6th, I say they absolutely should. It sounds like this press conference is actually not our new White House press secretary. It's President Biden talking about racial equity and his agenda to address that.
Racial equity. Got it. They're wasting no time to go right into the BLM Incorporated critical race theory agenda.
Our team's telling us, we can just fill you guys in quickly, we'll that the president is explaining how many blacks and Latinos in America are completely out of work, but he isn't mentioning that lockdowns contributed in any way to having those Americans lose their jobs. He's saying this is the time to address systemic racism and inequity. Can I just say, this concept of systemic racism that we hear about 24/7 from the left, it's just all the time. All the time, that's all I hear. If it's systemic, who controls the system?
That's right.
Every single sphere of influence, academia, Hollywood, film industry, politics. I mean, we could go down the list over and over and over again. The left overwhelmingly controls all of that. Even the church now, frankly, in the United States, they control every sphere of influence and every system that could possibly have systemic racism. So where is this coming from? The left.
That's right. And so if they were to root out systemic racism, they should start with their own institutions, the own corporations they control, and the own colleges that they govern. And there's a difference between equality versus equity. The difference between equality and equity must be emphasized. This is written by producer Andrew. I don't know if he got it from somewhere else or if he wrote it himself. Although most promote fairness, equality achieves this through treating everyone the same, regardless of the need, while equity achieves this through treating people differently dependent on need. And remember, Kamala, she posted that graphic, that weird video, the day before the election. Remember that?
It was very bizarre. It was like this cartoon video explaining equality versus equity. But she understands this differentiation very clearly. And make no mistake about it, they might use the word equality, but the left is actually advocating for equity. They want equality of outcome, not of opportunity. And they're willing to do just about anything to make that happen.
So someone has a pretty good suggestion for fracking. I actually like this one. Harvesting.
Harvesting
is now the new front runner. I like it better than fracking. We're pro-harvesting. How could you be against harvesting?
I love that.
I kind of think that's really good.
You're onto something.
I think we're onto something. Okay, someone says, hey, Charlie, I saw your speech at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. What is the 3-point checklist you discussed? I wasn't able to write it down when I heard it. I'm very interested in your suggestions on involvement. Give me 1 second. I will find the exact wording on it. In just a second here. In the meantime, Isabel, can you tell people how to get involved with Turning Point USA?
I absolutely can, Charlie. TPUSA is growing at just an alarming rate this year, you guys, and we're really excited to get more involved with all of you. Alarmingly great rate is the good news. We're trying to start a bunch of new high school chapters across the country this year. We're expanding a lot more into the digital space as we're interacting more digitally online in these recent times with COVID-19 and lockdowns. We're trying to get older individuals involved our alumni program. So there's lots of ways to get involved. If you just go to tpusa.com/get involved, a member from our team can help you figure out where you best fit here.
That is the way to do it. And so I'm just pulling up this list and I encourage everyone to get involved with Turning Point USA. You know, start a chapter, all this. Someone just said, don't use harvesting. It sounds like organ harvesting. Well,
I think it sounds more like agriculture.
Yeah, I think we mean it more like the agricultural harvesting. But point taken. We're exploring here. We're brainstorming in real time, everybody, okay? So here are 3 things. I call this checking the boxes, okay? The 3 things I encourage every patriot to do. People say, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? Well, here are 3 things that every single patriot needs to do and every single American needs to do, every single taxpayer needs to do, every single Christian needs to do. It's called checking the boxes. Number one, list out all of your school board members, make a plan, get to know them, and influence local government. Isabel, you went through that ridiculously insane Illinois curriculum.
Yeah, you know how you fix that? Run for school board. Talk
right.
to your school board members.
But on your refrigerator, on your phone, you should have every school board member in your area. You should be praying for them, taking them out to lunch, getting to know them, looking them in the eyes, asking them tough questions, going to their meetings. Get involved in that. Just show up to the meeting, ask a question, say, hey, you know, my name's Sally Sue. I'm a taxpayer in this local school district. Is the 1619 project being taught in these schools? Because I would like to put a FOIA request down, which you're allowed to as an American taxpaying citizen, to find out if any of our taxpayer dollars are going to the 1619 project. That's all you have to do. It's literally it. Just ask the question. It's amazing how many conservatives are like, I don't know what to do. Just go do that. Second thing, learn something new every day. Learn something concrete, exciting, and new every day about our country and our challenges. That's what we try to do here on the Charlie Kirk Show. If you watched the stream in its entirety, we went through fracking, we went through curriculum, we went through filibuster. There's a lot to learn. Why is learning important? An informed citizenry is an active citizenry. At Turning Point USA and all the work we do on campuses across the country, I could tell you this, that the best activists we have are the most informed activists. The best activists we have are the ones that are most are the most well-read, most aware, and know the most about philosophy. And the last thing is this, is list the individual fighters in the movement, metaphorical fighters, of course, pray for them, support them, and help them daily. We're talking about the people that are going above and beyond and sacrificing for our movement. People like Larry Elder, people like Candace Owens, people like Tucker, people that are really going above and beyond because they need your support. Just check the boxes. Do that every day. Say, did I do those three things every day? The school board and local government, everybody, is so important because a lot of conservatives, I find, are just waiting for salvation and Air Force One. Meanwhile, the city around them is up for grabs.
And they wait to get involved in the process until a few months before every presidential election. But those few years in between, imagine what you could do and the difference you could make on a national scale if you went to all of your neighbors' houses and made sure they were registered to vote.
It's exactly. I completely agree. And so now let's get into the Arizona election law changes. In Arizona, we're reading from Tucson.com/news. The Arizona Daily Star, another swing state that Biden narrowly carried, Republicans in the state Senate have advanced legislation that would result in more automatic recounts. Some Republicans have also introduced legislation to abolish the state's permanent early voting list, which is a supermajority of voters who are registered for, although a co-sponsor of the legislation told the Arizona Republic, quote, it can't pass and I don't want to waste my time with it. So we are now personally in Arizona. I'm already talking to legislatures. I'm talking to members in the House and the Senate. We are going to do everything we possibly can to lobby and pressure for voting reform here in Arizona. We are going to be solution oriented. If you're in Georgia, you have to do the same. We have to fix the way we do elections in this country.
Well, and frankly, beyond just Arizona and Georgia, too, even if your state wasn't one of the ones in question when it came to integrity during this last election cycle, voter fraud happens in every election in every state in the United States. So take it upon yourself to get involved. States like North Carolina, states like Nevada. I mean, we could go on and on and on. But no matter where you live, work with your state legislature. You have a lot more power than you think.
Exactly right. Email us your questions, everybody, freedom@charliekirk.com. We are getting a lot of interesting suggestions on what we need to name fracking. Someone says, I agree with the statement that harvesting sounds too much like organ harvesting. How about garnering or collecting resources? Simple with positive connotations. Not bad.
I don't hate garnering. I like that.
Garnering. Okay. Sounds like gardening.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just think we need a rebranding because fracking is not – this is not a good word. Okay. Not that it's not a good thing. It's just the description I think we've been through. Okay. Here we go. Hi, Charlie. I'm a huge fan of your show. And Isabel. Peter says hi.
Hi.
Do you think there is a chance that any other Democrat senators could say no to repealing the filibuster? Yes. And so it could be John Tester as well and maybe even Mark Kelly. It might end up becoming the popular thing if Republicans start getting some momentum in the next couple months to all of a sudden be against the filibuster.
Right. I think people in Congress are much more in tune with what their mandate, we're using that word a lot today, is from their constituents. So if you are in one of these states represented by one of these Senate Democrats, say something about it. Call their office, send them a letter, show up at their office and ask for a meeting.
Yes.
The more you make your voice known and what your opinion on this issue is known and that it's going to affect their reelection campaign, the more you're going to be able to move the needle on this
Especially if you're a swing voter or a Republican going towards these Democrats in Republican states. If you look, just so you guys know, if you look at voter registration numbers in Arizona, Republicans are still out registering Democrats. I mean, Arizona feels like this deep blue state. It could flip like this. And Kyrsten Sinema knows that. And Mark Kelly knows that. And future presidential candidates know that Arizona is not done yet. Same with Georgia. There's more Republicans than Democrats. And so Democrats, especially that are representing in Arizona, they're very worried that a Republican resurgence with a good candidate. So that's why Kyrsten Sinema is doing what she's doing. And same with Joe Manchin, who's in a very, very red state of West Virginia.
Yeah.
Like one of the most Republican states in the country. And they're making you know, they're making a good move here. So, okay, let's go to here. It says, don't replace it with harvesting, not to be confused with ballot harvesting.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's good feedback, you guys. Thank you.
We got maybe garnering gas or gas garnering instead of fracking. Hope you'll consider. Okay, here's a good one. This one is from actually, one of our listeners did this. They CC'd freedom@charliekirk.com 8 days ago. Lewis did. And he emailed all of his Georgia representatives. And this is what he said. This is what a true patriot does and a good American. Lewis, God bless you. He says this. Hi, I was just watching the Charlie Kirk show. And he said the number one thing to focus on is to get states vote the way that Florida does. You're right. I think this is really encouraging and will empower future voters if, quote, a Florida-style system is on its way by June. He puts our YouTube clip in with a timestamp. Saw some of your hearings and liked how they were efficient and cool-headed. A Florida-style system is a clear goal and one that could be accomplished and can help. I'm a voter from Brooklyn, New York, but every state matters in national elections. See, he's not even a Georgia voter contesting for the future of a republic. Lewis, I'm going to send you a signed copy of the book. You know why? The representative responded and said this. Good evening. Thank you. Agree with you. Florida does have a really good model for sure. Appreciate you reaching out. All your best to you and your family. Best regards, a member of the state house. That is our system at work. And so thank you, guys. Thank you for that. And I'm going to send you a signed copy of the book. Okay, let's go to one here. A lot of questions about – okay, here we go. Says, you mentioned going into Georgia and Arizona legislature but never went into detail about Arizona, what's going on. Basically what's going on, there's a couple bills proposed. One of them's likely to fail. Another one we're going to push for. I think we need even more aggressive reforms than what's being pushed there. And so we need to go contact our state legislators respectfully and directly in the House and the Senate in Arizona and say, hey, you have to post this. You have to post these bills and you have to put them up for a vote in the state legislatures.
Yeah, it's going to take a mobilization of the people and constituents to make that happen, I think, in several of these states. So get to work, everybody.
Amen. Everyone, email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Let's get to one here. Basically, they're saying there's one of these questions here. You know, I'm in college. I'm under a lot of attack. I'm being doxxed. How do I deal with that? Isabel.
You're not alone. I have to say that every time because
that's right.
I know how isolating that feels. I lived that every day when I was in college, you guys, and so many of our activists for Turning Point USA have to live that reality every day. The best way that you can fight back against it is by continuing to get up every single day.
Amen.
I know that's exhausting and it's hard and scary sometimes, but the left calls you all these names. They attack you. They shut you down. They try to isolate you in an attempt to get you to be quiet about what you believe in, to stop raising your hand in class, to stop saying things in student government, to stop tabling out on campus and handing out Turning Point materials, stop inviting people like Charlie to come speak on your campus.
That's right.
If you don't back down, that's when those people start to shy away from everything that they're doing. So keep doing everything you're doing. We're always here to support you and you're never alone.
TPUSA.com/get involved. And in addition to that, those of you that have sort of issues and problems, you guys can email us freedom@charliekirk.com. We'll try and help you the best we can. And yes, there's also an Arizona audit underway in Maricopa County. Isn't it funny now that the election is over, all of a sudden audits start to get done?
Yeah.
It's kind of strange and suspicious how that all works out. And then, Isabel, you have a new show coming up, don't you?
I do. We announced it yesterday. I'm so excited. I'm working with our Turning Point Productions team, who is amazing, by the way, you guys. They do so much great work, and they often go unthanked for that. So we love the support that we can show to them. My new show is going to be coming out every single day starting next Monday. It's called Freedom Seeds. And the entire concept is to give you guys metaphorical ammo to win our culture war. Things like facts and data and statistics that you're not hearing in the mainstream media, from your college professors, on your social media feeds. And every day, in just about a minute, you're going to be given a fact that you can take out into the world and help us with this culture war.
Amen. Email us your questions, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you for supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Today's a good day. It's a great day to be alive. Joe Biden's going to keep on doing stuff by executive action that could be sued and overturned by the courts or undone by another president. But the big structural changes, state additions, Supreme Court changes, are not going to happen insofar the Democrats are telling the truth of Sinema and Manchin. And that is a reason for celebration, because it was a real fear the filibuster would get lifted. And so now it's time to recruit candidates, organize our local communities, win arguments, not give up. Our will never be broken, and we have brighter days ahead. You know how to get involved. If you guys want to get involved with Turning Point USA, it's tpusa.com slash get involved. God bless America. God bless you. We'll be back very soon. Today's a good day. Enjoy the small little victory. We'll be back later.